You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
We have Joe Fan in the building. He joins us every Wednesday for the final hour of Jake and Stacy. It's Joe Fan of NBC Sports Northwest. And you guys, for the first time, you and Jake get to be in the same building. Jake, you've been remote in San Diego.
Yes.
And finally, we are all here together for the first time.
Yeah, Joe's getting the full experience today. I'm back. Curtis is back. It's ready to roll,
You guys are also accidental
twins. We coordinated
twins.
Outfits.
Yeah.
It's big.
710sports.com/video is where you can also watch the stream of the show. And if you are watching, you may have noticed that Jake and Joe, now I'm going to mess up your guys' names, Jake and Joe are also matching. It's going to be very confusing, a very confusing hour to me as I try to throw to both of you.
Jake's got the fresh cut, though. I need to get a fresh cut.
Tough stuff.
Yeah, my guy Robbie hooked it up yesterday. But you know, Joe, the thing is that when you wear a bright coral, what color would you say this is?
Salmon,
Stacy?
Coral.
This is salmon.
It's coral.
Coral. Okay. When you wear a bright coral, there's just something about it that just makes you feel like you're on. It's hitting on all cylinders today.
The sun is shining. It's a beautiful day here in Eastlake.
Yeah, totes. Moving on. Daniel Jeremiah was on the Brock and Sog podcast the other day. That new episode dropped on Tuesday. You can download it at brockandsogpodcast.com. He said some stuff. Some of you are going to hate this. I'm just going to warn you right now. Just a warning. Some of you are really going to hate this. Some of you are going to love it, and you're going to get really fired up. Here's why I'm introducing it, because I think it makes for a fascinating conversation, and I think the best people are here to be having it. People who cover the team regularly, people who have a ton of insight into this.
Totes.
And so here we go. Daniel Jeremiah, cut number 4, says he feels like it's a short-term marriage between Russ and the Hawks.
That's why the Julio Jones thing to me made sense with them, which is just a full all chips in. Let's really go for this thing on this last run here with Russell. If not, you don't have any picks next year. If you wanted to at that point in time, if this whole thing doesn't work and you just, you know, you're a one and done in the playoffs, or you don't make the postseason, the time would probably be right to make the trade and get some picks and try and rebuild this thing. So it definitely feels like this is a short-term marriage we have here with Russell and the Seahawks. And so if that's the case, let's you know, make a run at it.
Now let's step back for just a minute here. Daniel Jeremiah, or DJ as I call him, we're tight, said that he wasn't surprised at all when the Seahawks were involved in the Julio Jones trade talk, because he thinks, of course you are. You've got to go all in. You got Russell Wilson. You don't know how much longer you're going to be having him there. He also said that were it not for the Aaron Rodgers drama in Green Bay, Russell Wilson would still be the number one topic of conversation in the NFL. He said this is a huge story. Here locally in Seattle, we have heard from Pete Carroll since then, who I think calmed the fears of a lot of fans, saying, look, a lot of this is just kind of on media and people getting it all, you know, hyped up and talking about it. We've sorted things out. So throwing it to you guys, and then we'll continue this conversation, are they in win now mode? Is now the time? And I'm saying that with the context of the implication of you won't have Russell Wilson for long.
I think that they're in a win now mode, not because they're in a short-term marriage. First off, I don't know what that – what is a short-term marriage?
He's implying that Russell Wilson may not play out the length of his career, which would go through 23, I believe, mm-hmm. or just would not then be extended. That your time with Russell Wilson, let's say, is limited to the next mm-hmm. year, 2 years.
Okay. All right.
That's what
he's seeing the train wreck down the road, right? Like, you're the best friend and you're looking at the situation going, yeah, I don't see those two actually making this last. I don't think that this is a short-term marriage. I believe that still, that Russell Wilson, there is plenty of opportunity to see, and future's bright, to see Russell Wilson as a Seattle Seahawk for many years to come. Obviously, it's going to depend on what happens over the course of this time. But I do believe that they should be in a win now mode, because you have what's in front of you, the sure thing. You have Russell. You know exactly what you have. You have Russell. You have Bobby. You have Jamal. You have DK. You have Tyler. You've got Dwayne Brown. You've got these guys under contract right now, or you can have them under contract for the next couple years. Whereas you plan and you go out, you know, 5 to 10 years down the road, now you're just talking about trying to give yourself a chance every single year and not really ever truly going, putting your chips in and going all in with it. So I don't think it's because of the short-term marriage, but I do think that they have a definite defined window that they should be trying to maximize as much as they humanly possibly can every single year.
Anytime you have a franchise quarterback in his prime, you owe it to your team, your organization, your fan base to be all in. And I think you saw that with Jamal Adams' move last year. This team has not been shy about making big moves to try to move the needle and get them back to their first NFC Championship game since 2014. But I do think there's something to the analogy. You could argue, if we're going down this road of a short-term marriage, that this has been a marriage that has flourished for a decade, and it's been successful, and it's won a Super Bowl, and they've been to the playoffs year after year, and awards have been won, and this is the most successful and sustained success this organization has ever had. But they've hit a rough patch in their relationship, and feelings have been hurt, and those wounds have festered, and you've seen that sort of build up this offseason to where they had to go to counseling. They went to counseling, and they say, you know what, we're going to give this another shot. But the wins have to follow. And so I do think there's something to be said for this being a potentially short-term marriage, because I don't think if they regress again and Shane Waldron isn't the guy and they are one and done again, or even worse, God forbid, they don't make the playoffs at all, then I do think there's an opportunity for this to blow up and for Duane Brown to potentially retire and for Russell Wilson says, you know what, I've given everything I can to this organization. I owe it to myself and my legacy in the prime of my career to try my hand elsewhere, because it's just not working here. We have tried everything, and there's no harm in that. There's no fault in that. I don't think anyone has done anything other than put all of themselves into this.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point, one person in that relationship could say, you know what, this is it for me. And so until the wins follow, I don't think anyone can definitively say that everything is A-OK now with Russell Wilson and the Seahawks.
Well, I agree with that, that they are at a unique crossroads, right? You can't deny that. You can't deny that they're at a crossroads as an organization. And the key part of that is the wins. And not just winning in the regular season, but can they get deeper into the playoffs? Can you have, Stacey and Joe, either a feeling you see them actually get to an NFC Championship game, or you have the feeling like you did after 2012. I know we make fun of that all the time, and they've said that for years and years and years.
I think that ship has sailed, though.
Like 2012. I don't think it has, because you have to feel like you're in a spot where you're progressing. Over the last couple years, you have not been progressing. Progressing to what? Who's been progressing? Your defense, your offense? What can you hang your hat on and say, man, yeah, that group, they come back next year, they are ready to go. They have not been in that position. Therefore, as you said, to your point, they need to produce results.
I just think it's different, because in 2011, the team wasn't like, man, we thought we could win a Super Bowl this year. So that feeling hadn't gotten to that point where you're there, you've been there. When Pete Carroll says, I didn't have this in my mind to be one and done. KJ Wright says, man, I thought we were going to be a Super Bowl team. I thought this was the most talented team we'd had since 2014. So you don't get that sort of, oh, it's coming. It's got to be here. You know, I think you're past the Cinderella story. This is a team that's in the playoffs every year, and at some point just has to get the job done. And that's what makes these seasons so bizarre, and is it, especially if the formula continues of they're winning games, but they're winning close, and it's a little bit ugly, and it's they're anxious all the way through the fourth quarter. You're going to get to where you're either hosting a playoff game or going on the road, and it's going to be fans are going to say, here we go again. Can they do it? Are they going to be one and done? Unless they are absolutely blowing teams out and looking truly dominant, which is not something we've seen from this team a whole lot over the last couple of seasons, the questions are going to remain until they actually do it. But I just don't think it's possible for this group to have the feeling they had following 2012.
No, anything less than going to a Super Bowl is always going to feel like a disappointment when you feel like you should be there. And I think they have a right to feel like they should be there. I'm going to throw in a couple devil's advocate arguments to move this forward, because the text line, Mac and Jack's text line, 710-710, blowing up with a couple people that are agreeing and a couple people saying, well, here's me sounding off on this. So I'm going to throw them all at once. Let's talk about these. Number one, well, you can't understate the fact that they were eliminated without Carson on the field the last 2 years, right? So saying like injuries have been in your way.
Well, not this second, last year, but not this last in year, 2019, but yes.
A second point saying, well, hey, if Russell Wilson wants to be put, and you guys already know what's coming, if Russell Wilson wants to get back to a Super Bowl, he may need to take less money. They had their best team when he was on his rookie deal. And then obviously the third point being a question, and this one's in part for me, then like, what do you need? What's the piece that's missing? Do they have the pieces? Is it possible this year for this team to get to a Super Bowl?
Lots to unpack there.
Let's start with the salary because this gets people the most fired up.
Okay, but the salary is...
I love this topic.
This, to me, is a topic of, well, you can point to that 1,000 times. It's not going to change.
Right.
It's not going to go anywhere. And the team, the team is the one that is responsible, ultimately, for wanting to sign off on that contract.
But I think fans would say, but Russell Wilson, totally get you. And by the way, get your money. I'm playing devil's advocate right now. Get your money, players.
I understand that.
But I think that there are people saying, Russell Wilson, if you want them to go out and get Julio for $15.3 million, and you want them to go out and get an offensive lineman like Joe Tooney, if you want them to go out and get, who is like that one of the highest paid free agents, if you want them to go out and get all these guys, don't take $35, $40
million. No, but you've seen guys like Patrick Mahomes. You've seen the organizations where they've been on the same page. They've worked together to make the contracts fit the situation. Have we heard any conversation of Russell Wilson saying no to restructure? No. I can guarantee you that if they would have went to him and said, hey, we really want to sign Joe Tooney, Stacey. We want to sign Joe Tooney. We want to go out. We need to, you know, move a few dollars and do some of this stuff. You don't think he would have said yes to that? He absolutely would have.
Why wouldn't they?
That's been on the table for them because it's not financially responsible. That's the way that this organization has always worked. And it's not, and I'm not saying that as a negative, but they weren't interested in that. So Russ isn't necessarily holding them back from making those types of moves. They were obviously interested in the Julio Jones situation. They never would have paid $15 million or taken on that salary for Julio Jones at 32 years old. That wasn't the thing that was holding them back. To me, as I look forward for this team and coming back to the idea of what Joe said about this needing to work, the only scenario in which I point out the feeling, the vibe, not necessarily 2012 of the good vibes of seeing your young team, your young nucleus, and seeing everything coming together, but the relationship there, it could be of him and Shane Waldron. If Shane Waldron and Russell Wilson in this offense really take a step forward, a positive step in the right direction, outside of winning a Super Bowl, I think that that is the one area that could be the saving grace in terms of not only saving the relationship, but getting yourself the success that you've been wanting over the last few years as an organization, as an individual, you know, all those things combined. If you feel like you're finally in a modernized NFL offense, a true modernized NFL offense that can maximize the strengths of you as a quarterback and everyone around you, I think that that is a positive thing for your team.
I love this conversation because, yes, you can't argue. It is a fact that it would be easier to build a roster and you'd have more money to spend if your quarterback made $10 million instead of $35 million. So, okay, let's level there. Fine. But then you talk about this is one of the best players in the history of the game, quite literally.
Right.
So, you're going to fault him for getting his. So, I'm never going to play that game. And two, you could make the argument, if I'm Russ, saying, why am I going to donate money to charity if I don't think it's going to be spent wisely? I mean, look at the wasted draft picks. Look at the wasted money spent in free agency. There have been so many wrong turns this front office has made. A number of amazing ones, sure. But when we pivot this conversation towards the second question Stacey asked of what's it going to take, I think it's twofold. I think it's exactly what Jake said in terms of the relationship with Russell Wilson and Shane Waldron and Shane Waldron being the guy. But also, is Dwayne Eskridge going to be that legit number three that complements Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf? Is Jordan Brooks the next coming of KJ Wright? Is he going to be that star tandem with Bobby Wagner? Is Daryl Taylor, the guy they traded up for in the second round, a guy they viewed as one of the best pass rushers in that draft, the guy they considered in the first round, they going to get anything out of him? Is he Bruce Irvin 2.0? Damian Lewis, he had a nice year, but is he going to continue to progress now at left guard, moving from the right side with Gabe Jackson going to the right? Is Coy Parkinson anything? Is LJ Collier just a guy, or is he a difference maker? Is Marquise Blair ever going to see the field in a meaningful capacity and make this big difference at the nickel spot? And you can go on and on of all the draft picks. Cody Barton is a third-round pick. But we can go down that list. Those guys at some point have to play, and they have to play well. It's not just about are they on the field. That's like the Trey Flowers conversation. It's right. That's a good value pick. Trey Flowers is not a high pick, and he's starting. Well, he's starting out of necessity. Is he playing that well? Is he winning you games? Is he a factor of why, or, you know, a catalyst of why you're winning games and elevating your team's ceiling? Well, probably not. Is he a liability? There's like the layers to it. You're a liability. You're able to do your job, and then you're making a difference and helping this team win games. So that's such a big part of it, of some of these young guys have to step up, and they're going to have the opportunity to this year.
I think that one of the things that you point to, and also a reason why we saw what happened in terms of this past year with Russell Wilson coming out and being more vocal about his feelings in regards to offensive line acquisition, is some of those moves. And
I loved that.
And I think that when you look at that in the history, it wasn't necessarily going out and saying, I would say, you know, fully, it's not going out and pointing at the guys that you have now and saying you're not good enough. It was more about talking to the organization saying, we have an opportunity here at our two offensive line positions. We have not necessarily handled it well in terms of how we've gone about spending our money, who we've decided to bring in to truly upgrade that position. And I would personally like to see that change. I think that's where things got blown up and taken out of context, or he did not adequately say it well enough to where he was clear and concise about what he was actually meaning. That's on him. But that ultimately is the crux of the conversation. And can the decisions that they have made, that Joe, you pointed out, will those pay off? And that is the difference between this team losing in the first round perpetually and getting to the next step, where we all feel and know that they can be so much better than what they have been. I think all that comes into play. And as we've said before, Stacey, on our show, and we've talked about, there's been other teams that have been able to make sexier, bigger moves, right, Joe? We look at the NFC West. We look at, you know, the trade for Matt Stafford. AFC has been crazy. We look at the 49ers trading up for the third overall pick. The Seahawks have been...
Trent Williams trade last year at the draft.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But you look at what the Seahawks have been doing. They've been more tinkering, right? Making subtle adjustments to their roster and hoping that those tinkering moves can pay off for them. And that is the difference with where they're at. And that's because they've got great established star veteran players. And also they have taken the approach that they have wanted to not put themselves in a financial burden down the road, kick it down the road, like we've seen with the Saints, the position that they currently are in. But I do think that when you have a window as clear and defined as it is right now, I think it would be doing yourself a disservice to your organization, to your fan base, if you were not doing everything that you could, pushing the envelope to maximize that. And that's not to say that the Seahawks have not been aggressive. It's not to say that they are saving money, because they don't. They do not save money every single year. But are they making the moves necessary to really, truly get them over the top? That would be, you know, the question that we can all ask ourselves when a Julio Jones trade is prompted, a Stephon Gilmore. You know, you can go down the line. But are those moves the appropriate moves, even though it puts you in a, you know, not necessarily in the best of positions, you know, 3, 4, 5 years down the road?
Well, and I wonder if this is how the NFL is now. I think what you would say if you were a GM is, well, I'm going to point to one of the most successful organizations, the most successful organization over the last essentially 20 years that did make smarter moves, that didn't mortgage its future. And that would be obviously the New England Patriots. I think that's somewhat the approach Seattle has tried to take. Hey, we're going to make blockbuster trades once in a while. We did it for Jimmy Graham. We did it for Percy Harvin. But overall, we're not going to...
Jamal Adams.
But overall, we're not going to make a ton of big moves. They're a team that will do it, but also a team that I think is very careful about how it spends. To kind of move this just a step forward, going back to what Daniel Jeremiah said, is there a move? You don't have to tell me a specific name, but do you think that there's a move then that this team needs to make in order to be a Super Bowl contender, or do they have the pieces? I know it sounds like I'm taking a step back, but what I'm saying is, if they don't make that move, are they not capitalizing that window right now? Is there someone not on this team right now that they would need? Because I think when I thought of the Julio trade,
right,
I thought that wasn't the difference last year. Could Julio Jones have gotten you to a Super Bowl last year? Yeah, maybe. But your bigger problem wasn't personnel per se. It was your system.
It was the thing that would hold. I mean, Julio Jones would be great.
You can't go back
not...
in time and sign a center. You can't go back in time and get one of the free agent guys available. That's done.
Yes. In terms of the moves that they can make now, there's not a lot out there. I mean, their hope, I believe, was that there would be even more action after this June 1st deadline mark.
So what do they need to do? And I don't mean to cut you short. We've just got a couple minutes left here, and I think this is right. going to a good spot. Then what do we need to do, and I'll leave it to the two of you, to see this team go to a Super Bowl this year? Is it a move? Is it one or two people that are going to have a huge impact?
The Seahawks are really good at making moves that we don't foresee, right? When it comes to these types of trades, I mean, the Clowney situation just pulled out of nowhere the last couple years or a couple years ago. But to me, they have to make not only a trade to really put it together, but they have to put it in a way that this is a true impact player at a position of need. Corner, defensive tackle. I think that that's the position that they're in right now. I don't think that there is necessarily an offensive player, unless it's a star center that in my brain, I'm not even thinking of or thinking that it's a possibility. Unless there's something like that, I don't really think that there's a big blockbuster obvious move that they could make right now that would truly change the complexion of what everybody thinks or the perception of what everybody thinks the Seattle Seahawks ceiling can be this season.
There's an obvious one defensively, at least that fans would love to point to, whether or not he's truly still a game-changing talent. That's Sherm.
Sherm is at this stage of his career. He is not the difference between getting you to a Super Bowl. I think that Sherm adding to this group would be intriguing, but with his health, with where he's at physically right now, to me he would be more of a mentor and coach on the sidelines than he would necessarily be that truly game changing Super Bowl.
But what if he doesn't need to be? What if he just needs to make your defense good enough where your offense can do that for
you? I mean, that's an argument that you could make. Absolutely. You could make that argument, but then that's the conversation that we're talking about differently. If you're telling me that we just need one other, cornerback signing that isn't going to cost you big plays, to me, that's why I would have said, okay, well, Julio Jones would have made a lot more sense. This is a guy that can actually make your offense, who's already your strength, that much more of a strength.
Yeah.
So I don't foresee that there's any real big moves that they could make remaining. The only thing I could go back and play revisionist history here a little bit is just I would have really liked to have seen them make a addition at the center position, okay, along with what they did with Gabe Jackson.
We have like 10 seconds left here. Curtis is telling me to wrap it up, so I'm going to force either of you. Don't spend too much time. You have to tell me yes or no, no further explanation. Are you ready? Here's your question, and I'll sound off as well. Is this team a Super Bowl contender this year?
Yes.
You have to say yes or no.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes,
I think yes too. Okay. Coming up next, Joe was at Seahawks OTAs yesterday. He's going to tell us everything he saw. We also have a question here about Jamal Adams. That's coming up next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
All right, Seahawks had OTAs. They're going to get to mandatory minicamp next week. That starts on the 15th. Joe Fan of NBC Sports Northwest in with us for the full hour. By the way, get your questions in for What I Need to Know. 710-710 on the Mac and Jex text line. I'm going to start collecting those so you can send them in anytime. You can wait until 45 if you're a procrastinator like I am, or you can get them in now. Joe, you were at OTAs where you heard from DK Metcalf. You heard from Jordan Brooks. And importantly, you also saw a ton on the field. So I guess I'll start with, I don't know how much you can say, because I remember covering you were limited to things you could write about or say, but I'll start with, did anyone who wasn't there concern you?
No. I think the only concerning thing, we're going to talk about Jamal Adams in a moment.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a notable one, but I don't think, and DK alluded to more guys showing up throughout the week, so whether that's Tyler, whether that's Quandre,
yeah,
whomever, and it's still voluntary, so it's not worth panicking about any one player not showing up to this part. I think on the opposite, you should be very encouraged that, as DK Metcalf told us, I asked him, why the change of heart? Because you guys had stated you wouldn't be here, and now you are a full week before mandatory minicamp. And he said our leadership basically had a long conversation. They took this decision very seriously and decided that, you know what, we can get there for 1 week of it, leading up, get some momentum going into mandatory minicamp. And I think he's excited about it because he's learning what he called as an intricate offense that Shane Waldron's putting together, a brand new offense, something that, again, as we're adding optimism to what this might look like, might not just be a regurgitation of the Rams offense under Sean McVay. I mean, this is a guy who is a very prideful coach and a very talented coach who obviously is going to have his own ideas of how he wants to operate and do business. But I think that was what was most notable. The practice itself was only like 40 minutes. There weren't any one-on-ones. There weren't any full team drills. It was mostly position drills,
yeah,
and some walkthrough stuff. But I think just having those guys there, I think, adds to the vibe of, especially when we want to talk about, you know, what Daniel Jeremiah's quotes were of, is this short-term merit? It's like, for the time being, everyone is back on track, moving in the right direction. And I think it was just good to have some normalcy of seeing everyone out there.
Yeah, that's a great point. One of the things that has come up about the conversations that we've had or heard about Shane Waldron is, well, of course, he's a new offensive coordinator. Everything's rosy. Everything's fine through the offseason. What else do you expect your coach, your head coach, and players to say when you hear something like that from DK Metcalf? Is that where your mind goes, Joe, when you listen to this? Because you've heard these same kind of conversations before, the same kind of, positive vibes about our new coach, new play caller. Have you taken these? Has it sounded any different to you than just, oh, of course we're going to get the same positive talk about the new guy?
I just think it's notable when DK Metcalf says it's the right decision to be here. And he said that flat out. Our leaders made the right call. That's awesome. I mean, it shows that everyone is really excited to learn from this guy. And I don't think it's necessarily different because, again, all we have to go off is perception. No one's going to throw this dude under the bus. But between what Tyler Lockett said about everyone, players and coaches need to sit down, take out a pen and paper, and get ready to learn from this guy. From Pete Carroll saying tempo is a huge emphasis of what Shane Waldron is trying to install. To DK Metcalf saying there's route combinations that people haven't seen from either of his previous two stops, to where people can say, okay, this isn't just Sean McVay 2.0. This is Shane Waldron, a guy who has a great pedigree but is very talented in his own right and is deserving of this opportunity on his own merits, not just, you know, what coaching tree he came from. So if you're a fan, you're trying to take all these bits and pieces, this is the time to start building optimism. And there were so many months of the sky is falling, the window is closed, Russell Wilson's going to be traded, to where now you can get back and be confident and say this team has immense talent and this might be a hire where finally Pete Carroll says, you know what, I don't know what I don't know. I have these core principles and this dude is telling me he believes in those core principles but has expanded my horizons on what that might mean and the multiplicity of it and the versatility of it and the way he's going to get all of his personnel involved. I mean, you could tell DK Metcalf was really excited to see how it's all going to work. I mean, Shane Waldron's job is to make the most of Russell Wilson, DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, Chris Carson, and everyone on that offense. And you could sense a genuine curiosity and excitement about what that's going to look like from DK. I think he was happy to be back, to not just be on Zoom meetings, but to get on the field, get in a meeting room, meet him in person, and say, okay, what's this going to look like? Let's start unwrapping it a bit.
I'm just going to tell you, from a player's perspective, it's huge. Like, that part of it is huge. Do you command the attention and respect of your players? And do they believe in what you're doing? Do they believe that this stuff is going to work? And I think what Shane Waldron's been able to do since day one, since he's shown up, has really been able to establish that. And you'd mentioned Pete Carroll. I think also with the coaching staff, the same thing, because it's pretty much the same group outside of bringing Andy Dickerson in. And so I think that part of it, it's a big part of the equation. And Stacey, remember we talked about our three things that can be the perfect bow for the Seahawks offseason? You remember one of those things that I had said was the positive conversation about Russell Wilson, Shane Waldron, and this offense heading off into training camp outside of OTAs and minicamp. And if these players, after these 2 weeks, offensively, DK, Tyler Lockett eventually will show up, Dwayne Brown eventually will show up, you know, Russell Wilson, all these guys that are there, if they all feel like, man, they are taking the right step and the building blocks and the faith and the trust in this thing is really on the right track, that to me is a very, very positive sign, not just in terms of what they can accomplish on the field, but as we just got debating for 24 minutes about the direction of this organization and the marriage of Russell Wilson and this organization, to me, that's a big step in the right direction.
All right. I need you guys to send in questions. If you are listening right now, do me a solid. Text the Mac and Jack's text line 710-710 for what I need to know. Here's how it works. you send in something you want to know. It could be about the Mariners, the Seahawks, anything. Example questions that are on here now. Someone said, how tall is Joe Fan? And I'm going to spoiler alert that I already responded to that one. I said, me, Jake, and Joe are all quite tall. I think all of us over 6 feet. Jake, you're over 6 feet, right? I think certainly Joe and I. And then we got a lot of fun ones on here. We also got a question about Shed Long, Jamal Adams, all of it. So we'll get to it next. Send yours in right now, 710-710. What I need to know right around the corner.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
It's time for What I Need to Know, brought to you by All Red Heating, Cooling, Electric. Joe Fan of NBC Sports Northwest is here for, the final hour, but now we're into the final stretch, and it's time for your questions. So I'm going to start here. This one's actually specifically for Curtis Rogers. Back from paternity leave.
Here we go.
They said, Curtis, where do you stand with root beer? I think root beer floats in this case. Rated, properly
Curtis,
rated, overrated.
Again.
Jake, let Curtis answer.
I think they're properly rated, which okay. They're rated is great.
Yes, thank you. They came under fire, under attack again, Curtis.
I'm fine with it.
Unbelievable. The things
that
Stacey tries to get away with when I'm not here,
yes.
It is absurd. And the fact that I was gone for multiple weeks at a time, Jake, I feel for you.
Joe, where do you stand on root beer floats? Overrated, underrated, or properly rated?
Turn the mic on. Properly rated. Like good, but not going out of my way to get one.
Thank you so much, because they're a dessert from the 1950s, and there's so many better things now. Again,
that's not disrespectful.
I'm not going to jump back into this again.
Stacey, come on now.
You offer me a root beer float, I'm taking it 100 times out of 100.
I'm taking it, but if you were offering me a root beer float or five other desserts, I'm probably going to take them.
It doesn't sound like you're taking it.
206, what I need to know. Actually, I'm skipping.
Yeah,
206, what I need to know. What sports stadium or arena have you never visited but would love to visit?
Ooh.
All of us.
Okay. Do this fast because we all got to get our answers in. Been able to go to a lot of cool stadiums. But the one that I missed out on that I would have loved to have been able to go to was Notre Dame. I think it's just a regal experience. It's like football mecca.
I never got to go to Old Yankee Stadium, which is a bummer for me. I would say I'm gonna go a football game in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, Auburn. So I just say I'm gonna cheat a little bit and say I want to go to the Iron Bowl.
Okay. All right.
Curtis, what about you? I said Wrigley.
I'm going to say Cameron Indoor.
Okay.
I've never been there. That would be pretty nuts to see.
Okay. What's the tiny indoor stadium where weird things happen? It's like the little, it looks like a can, like an aluminum can on its side. And it's for, oh my gosh, this is going to drive me crazy. I'll get back to that. Let me ask the next question while you guys are answering. I'm going to look it up.
Okay.
What I need to know... Larry Fitzgerald, he's still a free agent. How would he be on the Seahawks? I think he's going to retire.
Nope. No, thank you. I can let that one pass
what
on
if
by.
He
if
asked
people are complaining
nicely.
About 32-year-old Julio Jones, I am going nowhere near Larry Fitzgerald right now. An absolute legend, absolute king of the sport, one of the best receivers of all time, easily. But no. If the Cardinals don't want one of their Hall of Fame players, one of their lone Hall of Famers, then no, I don't think the Seahawks should go anywhere near him.
I don't have a strong opinion about it. I don't think they need him.
From the 775, what psycho answers the first one? From the 775, crunchy or soft tacos? Soft tacos.
Soft all day. Yep.
Crunchy is like half
corner
the taco
flour
ends
tortilla
up on the floor.
Though. Corner flour tortilla is probably
corn
the better
tortilla.
Question. Okay, I'd go flour tortilla.
Okay.
Yeah, flour.
Yeah, flour tortilla. For
I mean,
sure.
Both of them are fine, but
wash it down with a root beer float.
Either of them over a crunchy. I hate crunchy.
That would
tacos.
Be oh man, that would be a very strong meal right there that you just described, Joe. Your stomach would be on blast the rest of the day. A root beer float and a soft taco. Now, Curtis, I know you are a connoisseur of Taco Bell.
Taco Bell.
Taco Bell.
Yeah.
The finer things.
My guy, Curtis.
But,
Curtis and I talk about Taco Bell
do you,
a lot.
Do you ever run into the position where you
have to take a second thought of, do I want the hard shell? Do I want the soft?
You
taco?
Order both. First of all,
yeah.
Do you order the hard shell or do you get like a cheesy gordita crunch? I go the finer menu.
Yeah, I go the finer menu. Cheesy gordita crunch is the A1. Like, I will make sure this is a part of my order every single time. Sometimes they go a little crazy and put one of those Locos taco shells inside of
wow.
it. That gets a little out of hand.
You're so naughty.
Yeah. But I'm not going to complain if a crunchy taco gets put in my order, but I'm definitely going to, you know, seek out a soft taco a little bit more.
Okay.
What I need to know from the 253, what do you guys think about letting base runners advance even on flyouts? It would speed up the game and I think make it more interesting to see players have to exert energy on every play.
James from Auburn, I appreciate you trying to help the game because it needs help. But this is not the way to do it. This is not
every
the way
warning
to
do it. Track fly ball.
That's
runner
right.
scores
yeah,
the first.
Right.
Every single
so
person,
somebody
third
my
base
question,
didn't get the memo. Like, oh, I'm
no
going
one
home,
stops
I'm
running.
Home. That's yeah. right. My question for James is: okay, so
it's just chaos.
If it's a warning track fly ball, the guy catches it. Can that player score from there? Could he try to get not just to second but to third and
yeah.
home from there?
Yeah, he could.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's a bad idea. I'm sorry, James.
How do you guys think of this? Isn't on the text line.
That'd be
Joe,
wild.
We haven't asked you. What are your thoughts on runner on second? Because we have very divided opinions in this.
In extra innings?
For the regular season,
I think it makes perfect sense.
Thank
it's
you so
like
much.
It's like regular season hockey going to penalty shootouts
Love
where
it.
They don't do it in overtime or they don't do it in the playoffs.
What
it bothers me to no end because I am there. I have watched and suffered through this game. Now you're trying to end it, and a single could end the game. I could lose. My team could potentially lose off of a single.
What if they took another
gross
page out of hockey's playbook, and you get like they make it? You have an overtime loss or extra inning loss in your standings. So if you lose in overtime, you get some points out of it. If you lose in a penalty shootout, you get some points out
then
of it.
Then you got to start rewarding wins more.
Yep.
It's a slippery slope.
It is a slippery slope.
As we've been told.
I think that there are good, subtle changes that can be made. I think once you start getting out of the traditional, complete fabric of the sport, that's when we've gone
Nobody
too far.
Nobody needs to watch an 18-inning game.
Someone called me
I
a food snob.
I don't disagree
snob.
With that. What?
A food snob.
Who? You are.
You?
You're
yes.
acting shocked by that.
No, I'm not.
You have you have told Curtis and I that you were proud.
You're a 6-foot food snob.
Thank you. How about this one? What I need to know
minus
from the 206, what do you add 2 inches, 5'2"? What do you think of this change in baseball? This is their proposal. 3 balls is a walk, 2 strikes is a strikeout.
Oh. No.
No.
Everything is so
okay.
bad.
Stop reading from this person. They're just coming up with horrendous
oh,
ideas.
I love it. What I need to know, what's the oldest thing in your fridge? Be honest.
Some condiment somewhere.
Yeah, I was going to say
gonna be
easily
like a mustard.
It's going to be a condiment of some kind. You know what always, without fail, is always going to end up rotten? It's going to be some sort of fruit or vegetable
Ew.
That you planned on using, but you just never got around to it in terms of, you
that
know.
It might be a you thing, Jake.
I don't think so.
Man.
Probably a bag
I
of
eat
salad.
My fruits and veggies.
A bad salad?
A bag of salad.
Oh, a bag
oh,
of
salad. Oh, yeah,
yes.
that you bought
yeah.
an
yeah.
ideal. You were at the store and you were like, ooh, I'll put spinach in a smoothie. I'll
and
sneak
then
it into my
2 weeks later, it's like, nah. Oh, this summer mix is just destroyed.
Disgusting.
The
All
leaves
right.
have turned. It's fall now.
Yeah.
That'll do it for us right. today. Thank you, Joe Fan of NBC Sports Northwest, for joining us. We will see
the
you for hour
back.
3 next
we're
Wednesday.
Back, baby.
Curtis, we're happy to have you back.
Good to be back.
It has been so fun and happy you get to get back home now
but
and see Willow
isn't it
again.
Funny that Curtis is back and then he gets another day off tomorrow?
Yeah. Yeah.
Congratulations.
Loving that.
Wow,
you
really
couldn't have planned this any better.
This.
You dog.
All right.
Go
this
Mariners.
Has been Jake and Stacey. Do not go anywhere. Wyman and Bob coming your way next on 710 ESPN Seattle.